Hello and welcome to The Corridor here on CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston, Ontario, and podcasting on Spotify and Apple Music. I'm Dinah Jansen, and with me is CFRC Local Journalism Initiative news producer Jesse Bell. This regional news program features news from Kingston and area provided by local and regional journalists through the support of the Local Journalism Initiative and the Community Radio Fund of Canada. Welcome and enjoy. Hello and welcome to The Corridor. I'm Dinah Jansen. I'm joined today by Local Journalism Initiative news producer Jesse Bell and from CFRC's Arts Desk, Lauren Tucker. Our first story is from CFRC's Local Journalism Initiative reporter Christina Laurie, providing an important update on the future of the LaSalle Causeway.
Hello, I'm Christina Laurie, Local Journalism Initiative reporter for CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston, Ontario. Coming up are some of the top news stories in Kingston and the Islands. You can listen to CFRC's news programs Today in YGK and Kingston Currents on Mondays, Tuesdays, and Wednesdays at 5 p.m. or subscribe to our podcasts on Spotify and Apple Music. If you have any Kingston news tips you'd like to share, you can reach me at news@cfrc.ca. Public Services and Procurement Canada has officially announced that the Bascule Bridge on the LaSalle Causeway will have to be demolished and replaced. The Bascule Bridge has been a landmark in Kingston for over a century. The bridge was damaged at the tail end of March and has been closed off since. PSPC explains in their most recent release this week that results from a confirmatory laser survey revealed additional and significant displacement and misalignment of certain key elements of the bridge, making the original estimated timeline for completing repairs unachievable. Due to this discovery, along with the age of the bridge and other factors, the decision has been made in collaboration with the City of Kingston to demolish the bridge. The causeway closure has already had a massive impact on the community, being a key route connecting the city's downtown core and the East End. Its closure has resulted in major delays for many Kingstonians and has even taken a toll on the city's integral tourism industry. Ahead of the official release from PSPC, Kingston and the Islands MP Mark Gerritsen delivered the news in a social media post. He explained, quote, "Demolishment means removing the entire existing bridge structure from the navigation channel. This will require both an interim, temporary modular bridge and a long-term replacement, new movable bridge solution," end quote. He continued to state, quote, "I would like to thank the public and all stakeholders for their patience as this process has unfolded. I have been advocating on behalf of this community as recently as this afternoon during a meeting with the minister and PSPC officials to ensure that we communicate information in a timely fashion," end quote. The demolition contract is expected to be awarded next week, with work commencing directly after. This process will halt pedestrian access, which was established in mid-May. PSPC anticipates reopening the channel for marine navigation in early July. At the same time, as Gerritsen explained in his post, PSPC is developing a plan to restore vehicle, cyclist, and pedestrian access through a temporary bridge while preparing to construct a permanent replacement bridge. While specific timelines remain pending, PSPC emphasizes public safety and encourages citizens to stay updated through their official channels for further announcements.
Thank you, Chris. Up next, we have Dinah Jansen with a story from the Local Journalism Initiative reporter for The Kingstonist, Michelle Dory Forestell, about the passage of the Garrett's Legacy Act.
Thank you, Jesse. The new Garrett's Legacy Act establishes requirements for organizations and entities regarding the safe use of movable soccer goals that are made available for public use. The act also provides for inspections and requires the Minister of Tourism, Culture and Sport to establish a mechanism to report complaints of alleged non-compliance with the act. Garrett's Legacy is named in honor of the late Garrett Mills. In 2017, Garrett died after he did a pull-up on a soccer net in a park he'd been playing at since he was a little child. The net wasn't anchored and it toppled, crushing Garrett under the heavy steel. Garrett was one of 48 children killed by unsecured soccer nets in North America. Garrett's father, Dave Mills, noted how the prolonged process of getting Garrett's legacy passed was frustrating, but also it gave him ample opportunity to raise awareness about the danger of unsecured soccer nets in the media. Mills added that being aware of the risk of these movable soccer nets can be the difference between life and death. MPP Rick Brzee stated that he was incredibly proud of the work done by his team and the Mills family to pass Garrett's Legacy Act. A memorial to Garrett now stands in Napanee's King Street Park. It is hoped that this new legislation will ensure safety for all those who play and that this one family's tragic loss is not repeated. Thank you to Michelle Dory Forestell from the Kingstonist for that story. Now over to Jesse Bell with a story from the local journalism initiative reporter for YGK News Owen Fullerton about the success of the Kingston Physicians Recruitment Program.
Thank you, Dinah. The City of Kingston announced the appointment of 8 new physicians to the city last week, bringing the total number recruited through the Family Physician Recruitment Incentive Program to 17 since its launch in 2022. A release from the City of Kingston said that the recruitment efforts have helped to ease the backlog of unrostered patients and has helped Kingston to be one of the very few communities in Ontario seeing a decrease in the Healthcare Connect waitlist that is expected to continue to drop as other initiatives take shape in the city later in the year. The city so far has committed $3 million to those recruitment and retention efforts, and Kingston Mayor Brian Patterson said in the city's press release that it's been a necessary investment given the need in the community. Craig Desjardins, Director of Strategy, Innovation, and Partnerships, said the recruiting of doctors has helped an additional 15,000 people in Kingston become rostered by a family doctor so far. The Physician Recruitment Program provides a $100,000 incentive to eligible family doctors and also provides those doctors with relocation assistance for them and their families. Desjardins said the recruitment efforts have been fairly successful over the first year and a half of the program. He added that the city's strong relationship with Queen's Family Medicine has also made a difference in these recruitment efforts. This year, Kingston also introduced the Primary Care Clinic Grant, which provides up to $100,000 for clinics to essentially streamline administrative and operational tasks so that doctors themselves can actually dedicate more of their time to patients, thereby having more time to accept additional patients. Desjardins said the city has received 7 applications to tap into that program, which are currently being vetted and scored. The city's initial commitment to the physician recruitment program was $2 million, but it topped that up with an additional $1 million earlier this year. Even still, as the city's efforts begin to pay dividends, the available pool of money continues to shrink. With 17 doctors recruited and as many as 7 clinics accessing the city's new grant, the allotted $3 million is nearing its end. Desjardins says city staff are closely monitoring other municipalities for best practices and hope to find other ways that may not be monetary to convince more healthcare professionals to move to the region. In March, when some roster spots opened up at a local Kingston clinic, roughly 30,000 Kingston residents were in line seeking a family doctor.
And thank you to Owen Fullerton from YGK News for that story. Next is the LJI reporter for CJPE County FM, Brenda Little, with a story about a charity open mic night in Picton.
Hi, I'm Craig Foster, local journalism initiative reporter and news director at CJPE 99.3 County FM in beautiful Prince Edward County. Coming are some of the top stories from PEC. You can hear County FM news 5 days a week, 6 times a day on 99.3 County FM, the voice of the county, or stream us at 99.3countyfm.ca.
Musicians came from all over the county and afar to perform at the open mic event held this past Sunday at St. Andrew's Church in Picton. Professionals and amateurs alike gathered and played music to an appreciative audience in the hopes of raising some donations for Kate's Rest. The event was driven by singer-songwriter Bill McBurney, a former resident of Kate's Rest that is a property on Big Island in Prince Edward County, where dozens of people who were homeless or at risk of being homeless have found a place to call home. I spoke with the founder of Kate's Rest, Brian Hart. Brian, can you tell me something about Kate's Rest?
Oh, I can tell you lots about Kate's Rest.
I know you can.
Kate's Rest has been around since 2006, 18 years now. We've been providing permanent supportive housing for people who are in need. But more than that, we try to provide a caring and welcoming community, a place where people feel that they belong. In fact, Western University researchers in 2020 studied our community in particular and found that we created a sense of belonging the likes of which they were never able to find in any other type of institution or facility. So we provide there a place for people to feel that they belong and that they may have a future that they can build with us. And so that's what we've been doing for about the last 18 years. And the other wonderful thing about it is people say, how have you been doing this for 18 years? And I tell them, people, that I don't do it by myself. It's by including my friends that I live with that help me to be able to provide this kind of community to others.
About how many people do you have out there right now?
We have a maximum of 20, and we're always full.
Do you have families out there right now?
We have a family of a husband and, or a man and his father and his children, and we have we've had people there who have met and spent quite a few years together, in as a couple, in some of the cabins and so on. So we a variety of expressions of life together, yes. But we look at ourselves as one big family. Yes. So what we're trying to do is, and it's actually aquaponics, which
yes.
is closer to that. That's all right. So a lot of people have not heard of aquaponics before, but it's a way of mimicking the natural ecosystem that we have, and it creates what we're trying to do is create a space for people to become farmers who live there at Kate's Rest within that larger aquaponic system, and that they can be small-scale farmers and create an income that would be four times what they're receiving on social assistance at this time. So we're creating livelihoods as farmers.
And this works with water tanks and fish, right?
Yes, so it's if you know what aquaculture is, it's the raising of fish in tanks. And then hydroponics, which is the growing of plants in water troughs that provide nutrients. Well, we join the two together. And so the effluent that comes from the fish actually feeds the plants, and then the plants clean the water and it goes back to the fish again. I think it's very important for us to look at homelessness as a part of our own community that's lacking, not just a few unfortunate people, but if I see someone or you see someone on the street, then it says something about who we are as a community. For example, if you were choosing to come to Prince Edward County and there wasn't a hospital within 100 kilometers, you probably would think twice about settling here because you'd want to be near a place where there's a healthcare facility, you know, nearby. Well, the same thing, I would like to hope that our community of Prince Edward would want to create a community where if someone was down and out and on the street, that we would right away respond to help them and not just walk on by. And that's what we're trying to do, is create that kind of sense of belonging, not only for the people who live at Kate's Rest on Big Island, but also for the whole community, that anyone who's in trouble here in Prince Edward County, we're going to be able to help them somehow.
The music covered all genres, from dance tunes to folk and indigenous spiritual music. When the Wind and Spirits Call was a powerful piece performed by Jonathan Miracle, an Indigenous director, speaker, singer, songwriter, and the founder of the band Broken Walls, with 14 albums to their name. I had a chat with Jonathan about his early life. What inspired you?
I was at a place in my life where I felt like I made all the wrong choices. I had pushed myself into a corner and my back was against the wall. You know, drugs, drinking, just not living the right kind of life, and I needed help. Right before I left Canada, this was in, see, like 1982, I left Canada to go to California to seek my rock and roll fortune. My father took me to the bus terminal in Belleville, and when he dropped me off, last thing he said to me was, when your back's against the wall and you have nowhere to turn, call out on Jesus. And I looked down out of the bus at him, I was on the bus ready to go, I said, I don't need Jesus. Didn't like church, didn't like hypocrisy. Just felt like, what's the sense of doing it if it's all hypocrites? You know?
How old were you at that time?
I would have been 27. Now, I was old enough where I should have known better. But, you know, I got down there and I was faced with a choice. Like, take my life, because I'd reached the end of everything. I'd done the drugs, I'd done the drinking, done the girls, and felt very let down with life. Even though my singing, like I was doing great with the singing, like my bands were doing good. I had just moved to Hollywood, but my own peace inside was just ruptured, you know, and so I can remember this day, I just decided I was gonna end it all. And I remembered those words my dad said, and I just put my face in my hands and I said, Jesus, help me. And everything changed. It was like my father phoned me 5 minutes later. I hadn't talked to him in 2.5 years. I just said, Jesus, help me. And it was literally like the phone rang. I picked it up. My dad says, Johnny, I'm coming to see you. And I told him, you don't want to see me in this shape. Why don't you fly me to where you and Mom are so I can be with both of you? So I went for that because I knew I needed help. And And that just didn't seem normal that he would call me in the middle of all that. For several years, I sought after God, sought after Jesus. And, you know, I was told that the craziest part of it was when I came back after I met Jesus, I went to this church down in Kingston, and the pastor said to me, you know, you've got to give up your Mohawk heritage in order to have Jesus. I've learned, you know, I've always been very careful not to offend people. I found that when I sing the songs that people receive the message.
For the Local Journalism Initiative, FrequencyNews.ca and CJPE County FM, I'm Brenda Little.
Thank you to the team from CJPE Prince Edward County of Brenda Little and Craig Foster for that story. Coming up next, we go back to CFRC 101.9 FM's Local Journalism Initiative reporter Christina Laurie for her story on Downtown Kingston Blooms, a BIA community project designed to brighten the downtown region.
A total of 31 flower beds downtown, sponsored by local businesses, community members, and organizations, will be planted with sustainable perennials, bushes, and flowers this weekend, thanks to the new project from the BIA. Since the pandemic, the flower beds scattered throughout the downtown core have taken a back seat, but the BIA is bringing them to the forefront this year with the support of the Kingston community. The cost of the materials to plant the flower beds is covered by the sponsorships, which will be recognized with a plaque on each bed. The beds will be planted by over 80 volunteers from Friday, May 31st through Monday, June 3rd. Gardening Kingston volunteers got a head start and broke ground on the project on Sunday, planting 4 special beds at the intersection of King Street and Princess Street. I sat down with Mary Jo Currier, CEO of the Downtown Kingston BIA, to talk about this project. The Blooms Downtown Kingston Flowerbed Project is new in this form this year. I was wondering if you could get into how this project kind of came to be.
So when the big dig was done in the downtown core, there were 31 flower beds put in. They're called silva cells. They're a very specific type of flower bed that's used for urban areas where you want to have greenery that can sometimes be a challenge to keep things fresh and tidy. So that was about 10 years ago. And the flower beds were populated with plants over the years, but when COVID hit, it sort of fell by the wayside. After COVID, the flowers in the downtown core for the silva cells were cut from the budget for a number of reasons. So the BIA got together and decided to see if we could raise enough money to help get the flower beds not only purchased for the stuff that we needed to plant, but also to get help to plant them. So that's how that happened. We started last fall thinking about it and starting to plan. And here we are just around the corner from making it happen.
Yeah, that's really exciting. And you mentioned there you needed 2 things, funding and volunteers. Almost all the beds are sponsored by local businesses or community members. How's it been to see the community come together and support this project?
You're right. There were 2 things that we needed to do, which was funding and getting the flower beds planted. So I started with my members, and for the most part, it was members who stepped up and sponsored the flower beds. I'm working with Potter's Nursery, who's a local nursery, and they had given me a quote. So the flower beds are $6.50 each. That covers not only the flowers in them, but also a plaque for the sponsors to be recognized along the way. And then, so that was funding. And then the planting, I had volunteers coming in sort of early spring, but then we put out a press release about a week ago, and now I'm up to over 70 volunteers. We'll be doing the planting over 4 days. So I'm super excited, a little bit nervous because that's a lot of people to herd, but I think between Potters, myself, and some of my staff, we're going to get it done.
That's also that so many people are coming out to support the project, and those 4 days of work begin on Friday, is that right?
That's right. It's May 31st, which is a Friday, and it goes to the Monday. They're 3-hour shifts, 9 to 12, 1 to 4, all the way through the weekend.
Great. Yeah. And in your releases, you get into some of the ideas behind this project. I guess, you know, it's more than just making downtown look pretty. So I was wondering if you could get into some of those reasons that the BIA decided that this is an important project.
Yeah, the 2 that come to mind right off the top, one is the mental health and enjoyment and feeling of safety, calm, all of those kind of things for our, not only our visitors, but also for employees. You have to remember our employees and business owners are down here 8, 10, 12 hours a day. So this is like their home. And we wanted to make sure that there was enough greenery opportunities for people to enjoy. And then secondly, really just trying to increase the amount of greenery in the downtown core specifically for climate change reasons and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I was going to mention, it seemed like there was also a lot of thought behind what was going into the beds. I was wondering if you could get into that a bit.
So I really I was reliant on potters. We worked with a planner there, and they came up with specific plants that not only are very resistant to drought, because sometimes it can be dry in a downtown core that doesn't get a lot of rain. Although the city takes care of watering them, it's still one of the things that can happen. And then the second is the salt, that they are resistant to salt. Third is maintenance. We didn't want them to be high maintenance. So those were the three priorities. And she did all the planting or all the planning.
Once again, that was CEO of the Downtown Kingston BIA, Mary Jo Currier, on the Downtown Kingston Flower Bed Project. Be sure to keep an eye out for the new beds after planting is completed this weekend. And you can learn more about the project by visiting downtownkingston.ca/blooms.
Thank you, Chris. We now head over to the local journalism initiative reporter for CFWN Coburg, Jeff Gard, with a story about the expansion of school bus services in Central Ontario.
The Student Transportation Service of Central Ontario is requiring parents and guardians to opt in eligible students who plan to ride the bus during the 2024-25 school year. STSCO Chief Administrative Officer Roy Wieringa said the plan is to design routes just for students confirmed to use the bus. The initial deadline to opt in is this Friday.
That's something that's never done before, and I think it's much more efficient if we design bus routes for children who are going to use the school bus. If you're eligible for a school bus, parents may elect to use the bus for their children a few days a week or every other week, depending on their scheduling and things. But so that's fine. You can still opt in. But really what this has generated too, we've had calls from people who have said, well, you don't need, we're not going to use the bus, so we don't plan the bus route for them. So it's just really allows us to plan more efficient bus routes for the kids that are going to use the bus.
Wieringa said the company began communicating the change at the beginning of April. He said families can still opt in past the deadline at any time if plans change, but it will just take longer to get assigned to a bus route. In previous years, bus assignment was an automatic process.
You know, from our student database, we calculate for next year, we grade everyone up and then who will be eligible for the school bus. And we simply rolled them up and we started designing bus routes for everyone who is eligible. And, you know, what we're finding is there's a small percentage of families who don't use the bus for whatever reason.
Wieringa expects the opt-in to be an annual process moving forward.
I think this is a new program that we'd like to carry on each year. There's other boards that have gone this route, so we feel it's certainly worthwhile, and our intention is to keep this going every year.
The opt-in process can be completed at stsco.ca. Reporting for CFWN, Northumberland 89.7 FM, I'm Jeff Gard.
Thank you to Jeff Gard from CFWN Coburg for that story. And now over to Jesse Bell with the CFRC Environment Canada Weather Report for the Kingston region.
Thank you, Dinah. This is your Environment Canada Weather Report for the Kingston region. After a stretch of unseasonably warm weather on Tuesday and Wednesday, both of which reset the new record high for the Kingston region, we see a period of rain over the next couple days. Thursday, June 6, a high of 24 degrees, but a 60% chance of showers throughout the day, dropping down to 15 degrees overnight with a 30% chance of precipitation. That rainy streak stretches into Friday, June 7th, a high of 19 with a 60% chance of rain, dropping to 14 with a 30% chance of rain overnight. Saturday, June 8th, a high of 21 with a 60% chance of precipitation, dropping down to 14 overnight and cloudy. Sunday, June 9th, 22 degrees and a smaller chance of precipitation, only around 30%, dropping down to 14 and cloudy overnight. And the start of next week, Monday, June 10th, will also be quite gray and overcast with a daytime high of 23 degrees. That was your Environment Canada weather report for the Kingston region. This is Jesse Bell signing off and throwing it over to Lauren Tucker for CFRC's Community Concert and Events Calendar.
It's time for CFRC's Concert and Events Calendar. Have an event you'd like covered? Reach out through CFRC.ca today. On June 6th at Hotel Wolf Island, instrumental groove-oriented jazz and bossa nova group Clear Breeze hits the Hotel Wolf Island stage at 6 p.m. and admission is free. Also on June 6th at The Mansion, prog rock and metal guitarist of The Axe the Slide and Ruben in the Dark, Nathan Silva, brings his solo album release tour to Kingston, joined by Hollywood and Dinosaurus. This 19-plus show starts at 8 p.m. and tickets are $10. Karaoke night is every Friday at Daft from 9 p.m. to midnight. $4 shots, $6 light lagers, hosted by AA DJs. Also this and every Friday, Chris Jackson will be playing live classic rock and country staples at the Blue Martini from 6:30 p.m. to 9:30 p.m. On Friday, June 7th, Kingston Roots rock outfit The Millwrights will be playing a 9 p.m. show at The Mansion, joined by singer-songwriter Matthew Holtby and Kingston performer Dan Taylor. The show starts at 9 p.m. and tickets are $15. On Saturday, June 8th, from 10 to 11:30 a.m., Kingston Pride presents the Pride Run and Walk at the East End Community Center. Board members and volunteers will be there to lead you through the route that is flexible according to your needs and preferences, and water is provided, so stop by to kick off Pride moving. On the evening of Saturday, June 8th, is the 19-plus drag event Out on the Queen Boat Cruise, featuring host Tiffany Morgan and performers Rain St. Cloud, Universe, and Octavia. The boat departs at 7 p.m. sharp. Tickets are just under $55 and are available through the link at kingstonpride.ca. On Saturday, June 8th at the Italo Canadian Club, two-time Juno winner and seven-time Maple Blues winner Jack DeKaiser will be performing an 8 p.m. show. Tickets are $35 and available through Eventbrite. On Sunday, June 9th at Victoria Park, all-ages Pride softball is back from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. Bring everyone by for a fun sport event and RSVP at the link at kingstonpride.ca. On Sunday, June 9th from 3 to 8 p.m., the Love for the Grad Club fundraiser will be hosted at Blue Martini in support of the Grad Club and its ongoing financial troubles as a small local venue. This event will feature performances from Luther Wright, Holy Wow, the John McClure Gold Time Trio, Piner, Stephen Stanley, Goldwing, The Millwrights, Time Sheffield, Dead Roots Revival, and surprise guests. Tickets are available by donation on Eventbrite, and we'll have more on this event coming up for you on the Kingston Curator Thursday at 2 p.m. This and every Sunday is the Memorial Center Farmers Market from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. This event is open to all, and local vendors offer artisan goods, baked goods, dairy, eggs, food court fare, meat, prepared foods, produce, and more. Visit memorialcenterfarmersmarket.ca for more information and special events. That's all for your CFRC concert and events calendar for the week, but keep it locked because we'll have more news coming up next.
And that's a wrap for this week's edition of The Corridor, supported by the Local Journalism Initiative and the Community Radio Fund of Canada. Don't forget to visit CFRC.ca for the latest in local and regional news headlines, concert and events listings, and more. You can also follow CFRC on Facebook and Instagram at CFRC Music and on Twitter at CFRC. We'll be back next week with more in local and regional news. Thank you for tuning into The Corridor here on CFRC 101.9 FM and podcasting on Spotify and Apple Music through the support of the Local Journalism Initiative and the Community Radio Fund of Canada. We'll see you next time. Thank you for listening to this podcast produced at CFRC 101.9 FM at Queen's University in Kingston, Ontario, situated on the traditional territories of the Anishinaabe and Haudenosaunee peoples, and brought to you by the generous support of Smith Engineering.